It's 2021, man. Happy New Year.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Hey. When
was the last time we did this? December?
About a couple weeks, yeah. All before, right. Maybe before Christmas.
All right,
so
there you go.
So we're back.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2021 gonna be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I am happy with the path I've chosen.
That's good. That's good to know. That's good
yeah.
to know.
Yeah.
You're still with us.
Yeah, great. I'm back.
You know who else is still with us? Nas.
Oh. Oh, is that... That's a horrible segue. Oh, God. Okay, what...
Well, you spend so much time on your other shows talking about current events. You're on IG Live doing current events. This is the show where we get to reminisce.
We dig the knife and we
yeah,
twist it.
We dig, stick it in and leave it in.
Let's leave it in. All right. Okay, so we haven't done one of these in a, you know, several weeks.
Right. This is episode 6 of right. our 1994 debut albums, and we're going to do part 2 of our Treasure or Trash series.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Got it. It's been so long, I don't know what the
yeah.
hell we're doing.
Yeah, you all don't right. know what the hell's going on. But
I don't know what's going on.
I think you
on.
Already know by this song, It Ain't Hard to Tell Remix, what we're going to start with. We're going to start with arguably what people consider the greatest hip-hop album of all time. And the greatest,
oh.
the
I thought
greatest
we talked-
debut album of all time. We what? Did talk about this, but it got erased. That episode got erased.
It did?
Yes, it did.
Where was I? Really?
This
when
just,
did we talk
this
about
this? This just goes to prove that every conversation you have with me is a blur and is almost immediately forgotten.
That is correct. That is correct. Oh, I thought we talked about this.
We did, but and the episode got erased.
That was the erased
audio
episode.
Audio was unusable.
Oh, that one.
So what okay. I did was, instead of bombarding you with the same information,
all right.
and I'm sure most of our listeners out there, if you don't know the history of this album... What kind of hip hop fan are you?
Why are you listening to this?
And I suggest you go watch Time Is Illmatic, a great documentary directed by 1-9. It's available on. I tried to see if it was still available on Amazon Prime. You can rent it for $3.99, I believe, on Amazon Prime. But you can watch it for free on Tubi, whatever the hell Tubi is.
It's on what?
You ever heard of Tubi?
Tubi?
Tubi is a new streaming service.
Oh, new year. Who this?
Yeah.
What are we... What is... I didn't even know about that.
Well, because I wanted to look and see what I could recommend our listeners to, you know, possibly see Time Is Illmatic, the documentary. And that's the only service that's streaming for free. Tubi. So, good luck downloading Tubi, guys. And
day,
if you download
right?
a virus... sorry.
Yeah. Screw it at this point.
Yeah, screw it.
Yeah.
But this is the debut album of Queensbridge MC Nasir Jones, a.k.a. Nasty Nas, a.k.a. Nas, released April 19th, 1994 on Columbia Records.
Okay.
Right.
I'm still at loss for words that we... This got erased.
It got erased.
Okay, so right. how are we going to go into
so
this?
So what I'm going to do is I'm gonna give a little bit of facts, and then I'm going to give you trivia questions.
Oh.
And I'm going to test your knowledge on Illmatic.
You're really trying to fuck me over for 2021.
No, not at all.
Gosh.
Not at all. I think your brain is a steel trap, and I think all of this information is in there.
It's we're in a trap. You got that right. It's a big trap. All right, go with it. Let's run with it.
All right, well... As we know, Nas met Large Professor when he was 15 years old. And here's your first trivia question. True or false?
Oh, no.
True or false? Nas's original rap name was Kid Wave. True or false?
False.
That was true.
What?
That was his original name, Kid Wave.
I did not know that.
And he then changed it to his real, I mean, his name, Nasir Jones, but just cutting it to Nas and Nasty Nas.
Nasty Nas. Right. I did not know that.
Yeah, so that's a good little
great.
Tidbit on
it
there.
Helps my self-esteem.
And as our fans know, his first verse was on Live at the Barbecue on Main Source's Breaking Atoms, an album that you love. I'm saying that sarcastically.
No and, comment.
And then followed it up with an incredible verse on Back to the Grill from MC Search 1992's
I like
Return
that
of the Product. Great
song.
That was
right? a great, nice tune.
Great song, okay? Yeah. As the history goes, Faith Newman, who was a young A&R, young white girl A&R at Columbia Records, convinced Columbia to sign him. And she said, hey, if you ever let me do anything at this label, let me sign this guy. If he flops, fire me. So
okay.
we gotta thank Faith Newman for
I remember that story.
signing Nas.
Right.
Alright, here's your other next trivia question. What movie soundtrack was Nas's first single released on?
Zebra Head.
It was the Zebra Head soundtrack, right. Correct.
It was all about, like, white ends.
Right, and it was the debut, okay. acting debut of Michael Rapaport.
Michael Rapaport, right. Okay, we got to come up with some other way, because we can't say the word N-I-G-G-A.
No, but we just say
ends?
The ends.
The ends? That just sounds like some kind of, like, right-wing... The ends, I guess so.
Well, right. I mean, we're not allowed to say it.
Well, I know we're not, but I'm just saying, like, the movie was about a white guy trying to be black.
Well, it was a wigga, right?
A wigga.
The wigga is, I think...
Forgot about the wigga movement.
The wigga is an acceptable term.
The wigga movement was... That was
the wigga movement was there, right? You weren't in the wigga movement, right?
No.
You weren't talking black or anything like that, right?
No, I was... I had too many people listening to Susie and the Banshees around me to let that happen.
I think I went through a minor wigga phase in my teens where I'm like, yo, mom, step off. Yo.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Really?
It's a suburban life. Man.
I guess so.
Living
right.
that rough mill honey life. Well, you know, gotta catch bus, mom.
I guess so. You're a suburb guy.
Yeah.
I was in the city, man.
Yeah,
ducking,
you're
ducking
the city,
gunshots
man.
Every day, man.
Yeah. I had never seen violence.
I see it all. I see bullets, yeah, stray bullets
you
everywhere.
You've seen it all. You've seen it all.
Stray bullets in Makiki.
Well, obviously, halftime caught the attention. Of a lot of people in the industry, and Nas's album was arguably one of the most hyped things of 1994. Right?
Yes, it was.
We were reading about this thing,
right?
And we were kind of hearing, you know, in articles in The Source and stuff of this production team that was working on this, and this is arguably the first super producer album, right? As far as
yeah.
kind of like a Justice League of producers,
all-star team, yeah.
all-star team, DJ Premier, Pete Rock, Q-Tip, LES, Large Professor, all working on one guy's debut album.
Yeah.
At this point, we had rappers working with different producers, but for the most part, a producer was producing a whole album. I mean, a lot of times.
Yeah.
Right? So, the album only has one guest verse. Right?
Yeah.
Brooklyn rapper AZ on Life's a Bitch, which we just played. And here's your next trivia question. True or false, Illmatic clocks in at under 40 minutes of total playtime.
Under 40 minutes?
Under 40 minutes.
Well, it didn't have that many songs,
yeah.
So I'm going to say yeah.
That's true.
Okay.
It clocks in at 38 minutes.
Because it didn't
it's
have...
a tight album.
Precursor to the albums of 2020 and beyond.
Yeah,
since they were all shorter. They got
yeah.
shorter and shorter.
They got shorter and shorter. And the songs got shorter and shorter. Look
right.
at 2021. Their average song is 2.5 minutes.
Right.
That's crazy, right? The album received unanimous praise from critics. Almost unanimous critics. It got one shitty review from the LA Times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One bad review.
What was the reasoning?
He said it was repetitive, hip-hop, whatever, you know?
Interesting.
So, he's probably a white guy.
You think? The white guys, I would think, would love this. Because
yeah.
white
yeah.
people like critically acclaimed stuff.
Right. And Nas was actually kicking some knowledge. I mean, he was obviously a pretty articulate, well-read guy. I mean, this album, he's like quoting a lot of, you know, authors and history books and
into the
street stuff.
Okay, so we know him as an articulate guy. Okay, so this brings up a point, since we're talking about white and black today in this show. When white people listen to hip-hop, I think they listen to it dramatically different than black
people.
Through
a different lens.
Yes, I think they look at it not from the soul of it, like how black people have more of the culture and the soul.
Yeah, they want to feel if it's more real.
The real and then just the soulfulness of
right.
it.
Right, and what
white
do
people
white people
want
look
roboticness.
At?
They want critical, they want technical. They want... It's like
I look at that from a production standpoint. For me, I look at it in from a voyeurism point of view where it's like, I want to see him paint the pictures because I've never lived that life.
There's that aspect of it. But that's why a lot of people like Dr. Octagon, for example.
Right.
Let's throw him out there. A lot of white guys like Dr. Octagon. But if you talk to like a guy from like who's into Gangstar, will he be into Dr. Octagon as much? Or it's going to be like, that's too weird for me, man.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And that's why Organized Confusion never took off, because they were critically acclaimed,
right.
but they used big words.
Right.
And not to say anybody's ignorant here, but that's just the soulfulness, I don't think, was there.
I agree.
Like a De La Soul.
Right.
Or Tribe Called Quest.
It's a hard, fine line to ride street sensibility with knowledge and intellectualism
it's
in
hip-hop.
KRS did it. Rakim did it. And I think that's why Nas...
But then Dr. Dre came out and blew them all out.
Right.
With not knowledgeable
with
stuff. Because...
Dope music. But
right.
ignorant lyrics.
Okay, so we got... Okay, let's look at this.
People
okay.
love misogyny.
Well, yeah. But then let's look at the basis of music. What is music?
Why do we listen to music? It's a form of entertainment. Do we really need messages in the songs all the time? It's for fun.
Right.
If I'm driving around, that's why I say, if I'm driving around the car, do I listen to something like the X-Clan? Am I listening to something like Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy? No. Because it's not fun. Dr. Dre was fun. And it definitely made money.
And we're not going to say Dr. Dre didn't have... I mean, he had...
He talked street knowledge.
I mean, he had Little Ghetto Boy on the album.
Right, there's street knowledge. There's truth.
There was no like non-conscious side for Dr. Dre. I'm not. We're not trying to say that.
But you look at Nas, it's just... Nas had to be careful. Because Nas could have either went Organized Confusion route, which sold nothing.
Right.
Brand Nubian route, which sold nothing.
Right.
Or does he go like something like a Rakim that made more money? Or a Big Daddy Kane who made more money? You got to walk a fine line. And that was the thing when you have these critically acclaimed guys. That's why that LA Critic guy that you brought up probably looked at it as repetitive. Because he's from LA. Maybe he's biased already with the Dr. Dre fun. And he wants Let Me Ride. He wants, you know, Fuck With Dre Day.
Yeah.
You compare that to this, it's not fun.
I don't know. It makes me now want to go back and read that LA Times review. I want to see it.
See what he says. If he says it's repetitive, then he's probably into fun music.
Yeah.
Which, shouldn't music be fun?
Yeah.
That's the thing that people don't address. People say, like, all these guys have to have this message. We need to have a message. It's music.
No, but isn't it also... I want to find out. It's almost like a... It's like... This is like almost unanimously... praised album,
right.
And you got one guy. It's like one guy shitting on The Godfather.
Right.
Like The Godfather sucks, right? Which I'm sure people are out there that think The Godfather sucks, but they are definitely in the minority.
You can't have 100%.
And this guy's a published critic, so I probably want to hear his argument. I want to hear that.
We don't know the backstory of what his thought process was, right? We don't know this. We can't speculate on that.
Right.
But if he said that, he's either speculating here. He's into West Coast hip hop, maybe bias.
Right.
He's into fun music, maybe bias. Maybe New York's music, to some people, thinks that all the beats sound the same. Like
right.
How we listen to house music and all the beats sound the same.
Well, we all got phones, guys.
You know?
If you're ever curious of reading that one terrible Nas Illmatic review, check out LA Times Illmatic
Wando.
Review.
It'll be you
shout
checking out.
Shout out Wando. Happy New Year, Wando.
So, Happy New Year, Wando.
All right.
But that's the thing. It's just, I don't know when people talk about conscious rap and they talk about messages in rap, it's a fine line.
Yeah.
And the Illmatic album, with the hype that it had, it was luckily that they got all the all-star producers they got.
Yeah.
Because if it was just Less or Large Professor produced the whole album, no.
Yeah, I don't know if it would have worked.
It wouldn't hit.
Each producer painted a different picture. And
yes.
This has also been the difficult part of Nas's career is picking beats. And
that's correct.
We'll go into more of that probably in future episodes when we talk about his other albums, but he's gotten really criticized for picking bad beats.
Oh yeah, I mean we can make a whole show about no, it's not.
Ooh,
Nas's
I like
career.
That. I got
yeah,
a
yeah,
light
yeah.
Bulb
don't up. Write that down. All right, but the Nas album worked because everybody made a different track sounding, so it made it entertaining.
Right.
So the entertainment value was there.
It was a really great sonic mosaic of,
right.
of different sounds.
Exactly.
East Coast sounds.
Exactly.
All right, so here's your next trivia question. True or false, the iconic
this.
5-mic review in The Source was written by a white woman. True or false?
Was there any white women working at The Source? I'm going to say false.
That is correct. False. It was actually written by a Korean woman.
Who was this?
Her name was Minya Oh. She's also known as Miss Info. She's radio personality and a hip-hop author and contributor. But she went under the writing, a.k.a. Shorty. So if you remember, the Nas review was written by Shorty. And that was Miss Info. That was Minya Oh is her name.
She's still around today.
She's still around. Still working in the industry and whatnot.
Right.
So,
got
all right.
It.
So... Here's your next trivia question. Did the Illmatic debut in Billboard Top 10 rap album charts on its release?
On the rap album charts?
Yeah. Did it debut in the top 10 of the Billboard rap album charts
yes.
on its release? It did not.
For the rap chart?
It debuted at number 12.
Not the Billboard chart.
Billboard rap album charts.
But not the top 100 albums of all genres.
No,
you know, like there's two different.
No, I was just talking
genre.
About Billboard
the
rap
album
people.
Charts. The rap chart.
It didn't crack even the top 10, so it was considered a flop. at that time, because this was huge hyped album.
Right.
You remember tons of promotion,
right.
Lots of ads.
Right.
The album came out, only sold 59,000 copies.
Oh, okay. So I was going to ask, what was it in the top 100, the Billboard album chart?
Yeah,
Billboard. What did they crack, like 50?
Because remember, Billboard broke it all down. And rap at this point was rap and R&B, they grouped together.
Right.
This was like, oh, this is urban music.
Right.
And so they had their own rap and R&B charts for just their album releases. Then they had the Billboard Top 100, which is all the pop stuff.
Right, right. Where did it land in the Top 100?
It didn't even
crack the 100?
It was like, made it like the bottom of the 100.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And then the album wouldn't even go gold until 96, and it wouldn't go platinum until 2001.
That's right, yes.
And then it finally went double platinum in 2019.
Congratulations.
That's a slow crawl.
Jesus.
I mean, wow. You
know? Well, once again, it's a victim of bootlegging as well. How many people really bought the album but know the album?
I mean,
hip-hop people are cheap motherfuckers, all right? And they want freebies all the time. They dub the tape. You get the new Nas, what? Can borrow. Can make copy. Nas is down 100 copies.
I mean, bootlegging by East Coast artists. Yeah, this was the conversation that we've had other times, that is a lot of these guys' albums, Brand Nubian, Nas, like a lot of these guys.
It needs to be brought up again, and that's a factor why it took till 2019 for it to go double platinum. That's insane. That's just a joke at this point. For an album that came out in 1994 to get double platinum in 2019, clearly there's bootlegging there.
Yeah.
Clearly there's illegal stuff going on.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part of this whole music genre. This is the only music genre that's this fucked up as far as bootlegging, as far as borrowing stuff.
Right.
It's really bad, and that's a example of society, of how these hip-hop people are cheap motherfuckers, and then they just want freebies. Till this day, I've been saying this all the time, and that's the thing. That's why it's just, is it profitable to be a hip-hop artist? Back then, not.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you move on to other things, but just that's the remnants of why these albums didn't make money. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree.
If you're a record label, right, and you put this Nas out, and it's 59,000 copies.
Yeah.
I'm pulling the plug.
I think Faith Newman at Columbia thought she was going to get fired.
Exactly. So I'm surprised that the record companies kept with it for 95, 96, 97.
There was persistence. They released, what, three singles? They released Road Is Yours, It Ain't Hard to Tell.
One Love.
And then kind of, it wasn't officially a single, but Life's a Bitch was out there.
Oh.
Right? I mean. Right.
There was actually.
Was it actually? They finally released it as a single. Like
they released it as a single. Had a Sadat X remix.
Oh, that's right.
Sadat X was on the chorus.
No, I thought Sadat X was on the One Love remix.
One Love remix.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
All right. So the album's iconic cover art was inspired by the 1974 jazz album A Child Is Born by the Howard Hanger Trio. I always was curious what the album cover. You know, obviously it's
a
child
old jazz
photo, but it was an old jazz cover. And then we're done with the quiz. But I'm going to ask you a couple questions here. What song from Illmatic has aged the best in 2020 or 2021? Now we're in 2021. And what song has aged the worst? I mean, it's pretty easy. There's only 10 songs. So.
Aged the worst is Halftime.
Okay.
I mean, listen, what we're listening to right now. This is this
which
is really...
basically sounds like his demo.
This is old people song right here. This is old people shit. It's something that stands the test of time. It's not this. One Love, because of the simplicity of it.
Right.
It Ain't Hard to Tell hangs in there because of the Michael Jackson sample.
Okay.
That's about it.
So, final answer, song that's aged the best is One Love, you think?
Yeah.
And aged the worst is Halftime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Life's a Bitch is the one that is a good one, too.
Life's a Bitch is...
It still hangs in there.
For me, that's aged the best.
Right.
And it was never, like, my favorite track, but now it probably is one of my favorite tracks, if not my favorite. And then...
I agree.
I think probably for me, the song that's aged the worst is probably Represent, because of that chant.
The chant is pretty dated. Yeah.
But... Other than that, like, I love all these songs. I mean, and all right, what's your mic review then and now? Obviously, it's a 5-mic album from the source, but do you still think that it holds up and is still 5 mics to this day?
For historic value, it's 5 mics. For depreciation value,
Oh shit. Here we go.
Would I listen to this album in the car? That's a no.
Oh my gosh.
I am not listening to this album from top to bottom in the car.
Well, you listen to it probably more times you can count.
I listened to it growing up.
Right.
Yeah. Listening to it as you first get it as a kid or teenager, whatever you are, 94. There's an interesting thing when you listen to these albums and you're kind of a lone wolf in listening to this music that not many people listen to. Mm-hmm. You listen to things, and then you listen to things because they tell you it's good.
Right.
You got two different perspectives that you're in your mind battling. Mm. So you put on the album, and then you kind of listening to it and be like, okay, this is supposed to be good. This is supposed to be good. Okay, this is supposed to be good.
Yeah, so you're listening to it with a more open-mindedness.
Right. So you got to really listening to music in the 90s really fucks with your brain because you're a lone wolf. So you don't know. You don't have anybody.
And you're trying
to find
your own taste. Right. But you're using the Source and Rap Pages and all these publications as your guide.
Exactly. So you're trying to figure out, okay, they're saying it's good, so this is good. I'm part of the bandwagon.
Yeah.
Are you proud to be part of the bandwagon? There's no bandwagon locally for you, so maybe you should be proud to be part of the national bandwagon. So it's kind of a lot of mental. It's a straight. Maybe I'm delving into this too much, but I know for buying stuff at Sam Goody, Tower Records, and it's a you take a gamble on the A team.
Right.
You take a gamble on Pudgy the Fat Bastard. You don't know if you're gonna get into it or not. But if they're saying that it's good, and you're listening to it, and you're gonna be like, I don't know, but they're saying it's good, but okay.
Right.
And it messes with your head.
Oh yeah.
You know.
We've bought countless albums.
Of course.
That
right.
We just listened. We put it in the CD player,
right.
Cassette deck, and we're like, man, I regret this.
Right. Because you just don't know.
Right.
So there's a lot of that, and as you mature with your sound, you figure it out, and you know what you like, what you don't like.
Yeah,
it gets better.
We didn't have algorithms that can tell us
exactly
what. Oh, here, you like this shit? Here's 10 more songs that sound just
exactly
like it because of the BPM, because of this and that.
Right.
And that's what Spotify and Apple have done so incredibly.
Right.
But that's why also a lot of these young kids' music taste. Sorry, young kids, it all sounds the same.
They're not listening to this.
Yeah.
But if you, because the Nas album, as you go back to 92, 93, is an evolution of the 92, 93 New York sound, obviously. Mm-hmm. So if you were a fan of the 92, 93 sound, this is an evolution. So could you evolve with them? Or were you like, this doesn't sound like the stuff I liked in 92, 93. I don't know, but the Source says it's good. Okay, there's that.
Right.
So can your music taste evolve with the years? Because look at Group Home. Group Home is different than this album, and as a premier all-produced album, and the slower beats were in.
Yeah, but lyrically, I mean,
right.
It's a rough album lyrically.
To not talk about lyrically, but just talk about like the beats.
Right. The beats is incredible.
Right.
Right.
So it comes down to your musical taste of how you evolve as a person that'll get you to.
And I knew a lot of guys that listened to hip-hop back in the day that they didn't really even listen to the lyrics. It was their beat, guys.
Like the beat.
They just wanted the beat.
Bass, the beat.
Right.
All that. Got
the
it.
The vibe. You know?
Right.
So,
does it sound good in the car?
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm going 5 mics then, 5 mics now. I still love it. I obviously, there's stuff that's played out. I can't listen to a lot of it. But I still love it.
Okay.
It's still my favorite rap album of all time.
Well, it's my favorite and only Nas album of all time.
It's definitely his only, I would say, his only classic album.
Okay,
classic album. One more question after you.
Oh, there's a trivia question? Okay,
all right.
Just want to say I'm going to stay without bias here. 5 mics then, 5 mics now. I was going to say 4 to 4.5 because I'm just over it, because I'm just tired of it. Because I've heard it so many times.
Of course.
I'm over it. But I can't, for the basis of this, for history, it's 5 mics.
All right. Last question about the album. If there's another hip-hop album that comes close to being called a masterpiece like Illmatic, what album would that be for you? Doesn't have to be a debut album. Is there another album that you feel...
That's 5 mics?
That's 5 mics that you can put right up here with Illmatic. If not, you think it's a better album than Illmatic.
As an East Coast album? Or
doesn't matter.
In general?
Doesn't matter.
Dr. Dre.
The Chronic. Okay.
Hard to Earn.
Okay.
The first J.Ru album.
Yeah, the Sunrise in the East, which we talked about, yeah.
Right. I mean, off the top of the head, that's what comes up.
Well, perfect. That's perfect enough answer for me, man. Yeah. I Hard to Earn came out this same year. I have a hard time. Like, Hard to Earn is so freaking good that, man, it's up there for me.
Yeah.
It's my favorite Gangstar album. Yeah. All right. Now we go from an album that is considered a classic to an album that no one thinks is a classic, but is a good fun album as we go into our next Treasure or Trash segment.
All right. Here we go. Oh.
It's Ill Al Scratch. The album is Creep With Me, released August 2nd, 1994 on Mercury Records. This is the debut album of Brooklyn rapper Ill, known as Big Ill. And did you know Ill was an acronym? Are you
ready?
What
was it? Yeah.
I Lyrical Lord. I'm going to just take that moment of silence as you acknowledge that. All right. And then Al Scratch is from Harlem.
Okay.
So it's the Brooklyn Uptown connection, you know, the Brooklyn Harlem connection.
Okay.
All right.
I like this song. This is a great song.
It's a really fun song.
It's a very fun song.
I love this beat.
The video was fun.
Yeah.
Very grimy. Very
super grimy.
Low
like
budget.
They shot it on a home video camera.
It was like a home video. Right. Whenever I hear the group Ill Al Scratch mentioned, I never forget UMTV Raps, where Fab Five Freddy interviewed them for the entire hour. Like Fab Five Freddy does the hour, right? And he's with them the entire hour. And Ill, not Al Scratch, but Ill, was like he was reading off of some kind of a worksheet or some kind of a...
his manifesto?
Something. Every single time Fab Five would cut to him, he would always talk about, you should have checked out the album, and B, to check out the new single, I'll Take It With My Man Brian McKnight. Every single time he asked a question.
Right.
Like, he had it locked
in. Was that paper handed to him by his publicist?
Yes.
By the,
It's amazing. I would like to re-watch that clip, because he just didn't shut up about Brian McKnight.
I remember them being on a full episode, but I don't remember that particular. I love the fact that you remembered that.
Because he just sounded so fake. I'm like, God, somebody's like coaching him off camera or something. Like, it can't be every single question. Every single question. Who produced the album? Just be sure to check out I'll Take Her with my man, Brian McKnight. I'm like, what?
So
that's my memory of Ill.
Big Ill was actually featured in The Source's Unsigned Hype as a solo artist in 93.
That's right, yes, I remember that.
And Al Scratch was a former DJ who was working on his own demo while Big Ill was recording his demo. And Ill basically had Al jump on his demo track, Creep With Me, and then their rhyming chemistry prompted them to start the group, Ill Al Scratch.
That was the name of the album, right? Creep With Me.
Creep With Me.
Right.
Because it was the first song they ever recorded together.
Yes, he mentions that all the time. Just be sure to check out Creep With Me, dropped out a couple weeks ago. Be sure to check that and I'll Tell It With My Man, Brian McKnight. Every single, I'm telling you. I'll pull the clip up.
Well,
or
we
got to,
yeah. Well, we got to play that.
I'll play
I'll Take Her.
With my man, Brian McKnight.
Brian McKnight. And these guys had two pretty decent minor hits on this. They had Where My Homies.
I like this song.
Homies. Yeah. And they had
Brian McKnight. Get ready.
I'll
get
take
ready.
Her.
Brian. There we go. Let's go. Here
this
we go.
Beat
let's
is
go.
Hot. All right. So.
Well, they took the Kenny Burke sample and slowed it down.
I think the producer, LG, this is the LG Experience. So LG Experience was producer LG and Lowrider. I didn't know this. LG is actually Easy Mo B's brother.
Oh, okay.
So the one thing I thought that was the star of this album was the beats. The beats, the production is real slick. It's very slick.
It is?
Their rapping is not the greatest. It's fun, though.
He sounds like Method
Man.
He's got great voices.
They got great voices.
They do.
But if you listen to every song, they say Creep With Me almost every song. They're like...
Much like the interview. Be sure to check out that new single with my man Brian McKnight. That's what they're doing in this album. It's an infomercial of them. They're really pushing them on their material.
But the album's first single, Where My Homies, I mean, that was released in summer of 94. And then it went up to the top 10 on Billboard's rap charts for singles. And I think this is what happened. I think Mercury Records was like, the song's a hit, capitalize it, let's push it out, like get this album out as quick as possible, yeah. because they knew how fickle the fans are, that. Right? Yeah. So that's what explains why there's only like 9 songs on this, but
right.
there's like 14 tracks, but they're like skits and in instrumentals right. and dub versions, like it, you know what I mean? Like,
okay, so one point and one question for you.
All right.
So this song is still popular today because Jalen Rose uses it when he describes the quarterback for Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, Jalen and Jacoby on their show?
They or? Go, yeah. He always goes, where are my homies? Oh. That's his catch line for Patrick Mahomes. So it's still used to this day. So he always shouts out Illa
Shout
Scratch.
Out Jalen Rose, keeping 90s alive.
He always does that.
I know, he has all the album covers
and then Jacoby too,
and
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jacoby knows this stuff yeah. too.
This was their biggest hit off of the album.
Well,
this
no shit.
But, number 5 on the rap charts, and this also cracked the Billboard Top 100 pop charts.
But, you know, nothing compares to the new single, I'll Take Her, with my man Brian McKnight. How did they hook up with Brian McKnight? How did they, do we know?
They were both signed to Mercury.
Oh, Brian McKnight was on Mercury.
He's a Mercury artist. God. I think Brian McKnight was doing someone a favor.
Yes, he was doing a favor.
Cocaine. He was
bags and bags. Oh, God. Well, Brian McKnight, you made this song.
I don't think I need to tell you the album sales. The album was kind of a flop. I don't think Ill got his got the word out.
You would have thought he did.
The single sold, but the album did not sell. And basically, Ill Out Scratch would go on saying that they blame Mercury for not marketing, not pushing the album properly.
I blame Brian McKnight.
And Ill has gone on record saying that Mercury took the focus off them because they had signed Blase Blase at the same time.
Oh,
and
well, well, quite frankly, that's a stretch. All right,
that's them on record.
Okay,
saying,
you know what? Ill was an interesting character. I want to look at that YouTube clip.
Now, now it makes me want to look at it.
He's a character, and so I can imagine him saying that. I don't know what to make. I don't even remember the album.
All right,
I don't remember the album.
I have
at
one
all.
Trivia fun fact for you on this one: true or false? Ill Al Scratch's popularity in 1994 to 1995 would get them on a song with Michael Jackson. True or false?
True.
That is true.
I think I remember this.
They were on a remix for Michael Jackson's 1995 single, They Don't Care About Us.
That's right.
And you can listen to it on YouTube.
Wow. That is correct.
How many mics do you think The Source gave this album?
3.
They gave it 3.5.
Really?
I'm shocked.
Okay, play an album cut. I don't remember this album at all. Play an album cut.
All right, let's play Creep With Me.
Of course.
The title track.
Might as well. we have an intro. Okay, I remember this.
And they're sampling Snoop, right? So this is even influencing East Coast artists, you can see.
Yeah, I remember this. This is not
generic sound.
This is not good. You don't need to yell. There's no reason for you to yell, Al Scratch.
And then, with the popularity of Where Are My Homies, they had another track, This Is For My Homies, which is basically a remix. This song comes around right after Where Are My Homies. So, Where's My Homies? And then they go, This Is For My Homies.
I don't remember.
They have 3 songs on the album with the word homies in it.
To start this, that's what I'm saying. He's got like these bullet points and he's just sticking to these same words. Creep right. with me, homies, right. my man Brian McKnight. It's so strange. It's so strange.
All right. So I got to ask you, in 2020, is Ill Al Scratch, Creep With Me, treasure or trash?
Being that I don't even remember the album, trash. Where My Homies is great.
Yeah.
Take Her with my man Brian McKnight is great.
Yeah, it's great.
But that's it.
Okay. And both songs you would play in 2021.
I actually
and
would.
Live in your best life.
I would because All they're right. fun. I actually would.
All right. Moving on to our next album. member of the Hieroglyphics crew.
Yeah.
We have the debut album from Casual, Fear Itself, released February 1st, 1994 on Jive Records.
Hieroglyphics, yes. Casual.
The debut album of the Oakland MC and battle rapper John Owens, a.k.a. Casual, a.k.a. Smash Rockwell was his other alias. I don't know if you remember that name.
Yeah. Well, when I first heard about this guy, Source compared him to an MC Ren, like... Source compared him to MC Ren. So I was excited thinking this, he was going to sound like MC Ren, but he does not sound like MC Ren.
No, no, not at
all. His lyrical style is like MC Ren, but his voice isn't there. So that was kind of bummed, because I'm an MC Ren fan, as people may know.
Right. One of the greatest voices in hip-hop,
right,
as far as a voice goes.
Right. I'm not a fan of Casual's voice. I like the songs. I like the music.
Right.
I'm not as excited as people may be about Casual.
Oh, okay.
I'll take Dell over Casual.
Okay. I was going to prompt the question earlier, but why don't we ask it right now? Where does Casual rank in the Hieroglyphics MCs for you?
Okay,
we got quite a bunch, right? We got Pep Love in there. We got A+. We got OPO.
Well, to save on,
all right,
on time,
just give me
I
the
guess
top three.
I mean, I gotta go with Dell 1.
Yep.
You gotta go Pep Love 2.
Okay.
I would even go OPO in there 3. I would just put Souls of Mischief as a collective.
Okay.
And after that, Extra Prolific, I don't mind his voice either.
Yeah.
I'll go Casual number 3.
Okay. Casual number 3, barely making the cut.
Yeah.
Well, he founded Hieroglyphics in 1991, you know, with Dell, Casual, Domino, DJ Torre,
right,
Souls, Pep Love, right? And this album was recorded between the ages of 16 and 17, so that's pretty impressive.
Right, right.
You know? For a teenage rapper, he's pretty sick with the pen. He's got some...
No, right. This is an excellent song.
He's got great punchlines. I was always curious why he was the solo artist rather than Souls. Do you know what I mean? Like...
Right.
Why wasn't, you know? But I guess they really... They positioned Casual as a solo artist because they really felt that he was had one of the dopest pens in the group next to Dell.
Right. Right, so they figured they could push him as a solo.
Right.
Right. I dig it. I like the album. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever, but I think it's a great album.
Right.
And then the thing with the Hyrule stuff is you can't really look at the album fully without the remixes, because every single they come out with, they have remixes and B-sides.
I mean, you
unreleased
had the
this.
That's How It Is remix.
Let's
I Didn't
the
Mean
song.
To remix. Mio remix.
Right, all that shit. Cab Ride, all that shit.
And then you had the B-sides. Rock On. Right, there was a bunch of stuff.
So to grade a Hieroglyphic album is going to be kind of hard, because you got all these other factors underlying. B-sides, remixes. So...
I think the beats are the star of the album, personally.
Yeah.
Just because I agree with you, I think Casual's voice, it doesn't really compel me to want to listen to the album in full.
Yeah.
You know? But his lyrical content is actually great. But the beats by Domino, Dell, J-Biz is great.
And they drastically change... When they remix... Hyrule remixes a song, they drastically change it, which is a great thing that they would do.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Mio Mio remix. Do you have the Mio Mio remix?
Let's see here.
Because this is Mio Mio, the album. The Mio Mio remix is totally different vibe. Which a remix, that's what a remix should be. If you're going to remix a song, you change the entire aspect of it. Don't just be like LL Scratch and just do like, where are my homies, this my homie, that my homie. Just redo the whole thing. I know that Catch a Bad One had a dramatically different remix. Was this it?
It's the Mio Mio remix. Domino remix.
Wait, this isn't it.
This is the one?
There's something else. Can you look up the single to Mio Mio? Like, what were the tracks on the single?
It's not the one?
No, it's not. It's the one. It's a me thing. This one.
Okay.
Dramatically
See, there were so many remixes.
Right.
Though.
But look how dramatically different the beat is to the original
Mio
Mio.
It almost made it into like a club one.
Right. Exactly. That's how you remix a song, people.
Right.
You dramatically change it. You remix it.
Well, I always say, like, if Dell had the more, like, abstract, lyrical flow, the deep voice, Souls were, like, the rapid-fire, complex rappers, and then Casual had, like, more of that cocky, kind of more pimpish swagger, exactly. Right? He had the attitude. He was the attitude guy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Man, I haven't heard this remix in, like, forever. You have the wax on this one?
I do.
Wow.
Yes.
All right, so...
I do have.
Saphir makes a guest appearance on That's Bullshit. We talked about that in previous episodes where that they started the beef from after that guest appearance, which led to their battle. And then you got Dell and Pep Love on Who's On It. And then Dell also comes back for a little something, so...
You know,
Casual kind of kept it pretty much to himself. He kept the album pretty much to himself. He not too many guest stars on there. What did The Source give this album?
Four?
They gave it four mics.
Yeah. I can see that.
What's your mic rating then and now for Fear Itself, Casual?
Four back then. Four now.
Whoa, okay.
Because it's quality music. It's quality, fun. Not too much conscious message all the time. Then you got this song. It's another good song. This is I Didn't Mean To, right? Yeah. The beats are good.
This is one of the first singles, yeah? I think That's How It Is, and I mean...
That's How It Is.
And I Didn't Mean,
mean
To.
Me Too.
Yeah.
Me Oh Mile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dig it. I just dig it.
People,
you know, a lot of people bow down to them. And I get it. It brought skater culture into the hip-hop world. Totally. All the skaters love this.
This was the alternative movement in hip-hop.
Right. The skaters love it.
Especially West Coast.
Its historic value is there. So four mics. Say four mics.
I agree. I probably didn't like it back then because I was such a Dell and Souls fan that I felt like when I listened to this album, when it came out, it was a little bit of a disappointment. So I probably give it 3.5 back then, but I give it 4 now because I thought... Age-wise, it aged very well.
Right. It did age well. I agree. Yes.
All right. We're going into our another Treasure or Trash. Here we go.
All right.
It is Shaheem, The Rugged Child.
A.K.A. The Rugged Child.
A.K.A. The Rugged Child is the album. Released February 22nd, 1994 on Virgin Records. Well, that was fitting, right? He was a virgin.
Good. Wonderful segue. That's a second great segue of you. As we're 42 minutes in here. Okay.
This is the debut album of Brooklyn MC and the youngest affiliate member of the Wu-Tang Clan, Shaheem.
Yeah, the backing of Wu-Tang.
He was considered a rapping phenom at an early age, and Shaheem was signed to his record deal when he was 13 years old. He looked younger than 13. Right?
He's not a victim. He's a success of timing. Perfect timing. Wu-Tang
Kid Rapper,
was hot.
And Kid Rappers was hot.
Well, Wu-Tang was hot.
Right.
So you put the Kid Rapper in the Wu-Tang environment and sell it as it's another Wu-Tang guy.
Well, this is the whole conversation that we had a long time ago that Wu-Tang filled every void. They had white members. You remember? They had the Jewish member. Who was that? Remedy? They had Deadly Venoms. They had the Chicks. They had the Kid Rapper.
Right.
Right? Like, they had it all. They're like, we need all demographics.
World domination.
World domination.
But the way he rhymes, he's got that kind of gravelly, sounds like Method Man.
He had a great voice.
Good voice for a kid. The beats are there.
I argue Jamal from Illegal had the best kid rapper voice. For like a 13-year-old kid, I thought his voice was pretty
good. All right, I'll take that. Yeah.
For me, but.
But see, with this, I don't remember this album at all. I remember listening to it and trying to get into it because it's a Wu-Tang album. This song I know. The remix to this with Premier is good.
Yep.
He did another song he did with Big Daddy Kane. Was he on a big song with Big Daddy Kane?
That was on the next album.
Okay.
Pass It Off or
something like that, right. But after that, I don't know what else.
I think Pass It Off is on this one, but I know there's a Kane verse with him on the second album, I think.
There's something going on. So after that, I really don't recall this album.
Let's see if we got the DJ Premier on and on. Here we go. So, fun fact about Shaheem. There was a bidding war between Virgin Records and Warner Brothers to sign Shaheem. And supposedly it was sparked because Warner Brothers stole Tevin Campbell away from Virgin Records. So they were like, you're not going to take another kid away from us.
Wow. Child trafficking.
And Shaheem,
too soon, sorry.
His signing bonus at 13 to Virgin Records was $350K.
Jeez.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
For it was one of their biggest payout signings in
that's,
the 90s.
That's a lot of hype. That's a lot of hype to pay. I don't know what to make of that. I did not know that.
I think we know, did that pay off? Well, I think for most of us, we know this album did not do great.
I don't remember anything of it.
This is one for the money.
Oh, I remember. They made a video for this. Yes. There's a single for this. Yes. I like this song. This is okay. It was okay. I don't like the whole part, but it was okay.
So the album was scheduled to be released in 93. Virgin was forced to hold the album for over a year, or almost a year, because of contract negotiations because he was a minor.
Okay.
And that's why, I don't know if you remember, On and On came out in 93.
Right.
And then the album was already recorded when they released the single. But then they could, yeah. They just had to hold it.
Because that happens.
For whatever, they got the lawyers involved because he was a kid and they thought he was going to steal his money.
That happens. That does happen. Yes.
Now, this is the argument that's been online about Shaheem. It's never been confirmed if Shaheem writes his own lyrics because he's not credited as an on the publishing.
Does it matter, though? I mean...
Yeah, does it matter?
Quite frankly, he's a kid, for Christ's sakes.
Chi Ali wrote his lyrics.
But then he went to jail. Yeah, like I use that as a reason. I mean, clearly it's like probably RZA or somebody writing this shit. Or
but
Method
does it
Man.
Matter? Does it matter?
But does it matter? Are we gonna come down on the kid like that?
Yeah.
He's just a kid, damn it.
The entire album was produced by Staten Island producer RNS. You remember RNS?
Yeah,
RNS. He worked with GP Woo, and he produced the second UMC's album when they reinvented themselves with Unleashed.
Did we talk about that?
No, we're going to talk about that in future episodes.
Oh, God.
But, yeah. Oh. And RNS worked with Gravediggas.
Right.
Okay. And the RZA did one track on the Shaheem album. Do you remember?
Which one was that?
Little Rascals. It's
Let's
called.
Play it. Let's
all
go.
Right, here we go.
I don't remember
Rascals.
That at all.
This is Bob Billiard for the Entertainment
News. Did it have a lot of interludes, this album?
A lot of interludes. Or maybe like three interludes or so.
Because Wu-Tang, they love to talk before the song starts, right?
Shaheem seems to be another one of those little boy rascals.
So this is the only RZA song.
Only one, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a RZA song.
Yeah. There was three singles, On and On, Pass It Off, featuring GP Woo, and One's for the Money.
Right.
One for the Money.
Right.
But the album does get a little repetitive. There is like three or four interludes. You know?
I'm kind of over this song already. Yeah, this is kind of repetitive.
Yeah.
I don't remember this at all. Wow.
So where does Shaheem rank in the Kid MC category for you? We can have Mobb Deep in there, right? Because Mobb Deep were teenage rappers. Illegal, The Youngstas, Criss Cross, Chi Ali, A+.
Oh, forgot about
A+. Everyone forgot about A+.
Yeah,
shout out A+.
God, not the great I would
out
want.
There? All right.
What? I mean, Chi Ali, you got to put him up there.
Chi Ali's up there.
I mean, quite frankly, Jamal. If you want to count Mobb Deep, yeah.
Yeah. I think Mobb Deep is like, because Juvenile Hell, they were recorded when they were like 15 years old, you know, so.
Chi Ali and Illegal.
All right.
That's it.
That's the top.
Yeah.
Illegal, man. Wish they never broke up, man.
Yeah.
They,
that's true.
All right. What did The Source give, a.k.a. The Rugged Child, in 1994?
Okay.
This
Wu-Tang,
is shocking.
Wu-Tang was hot. Wu-Tang was hot. You had the Dr. Dre stuff, but then Wu-Tang was hot still. I'm going to go out on a limb and say 4 mics.
They gave it 4 mics.
Seriously.
Seriously.
I just guessed that shit.
Yep. 4 mics. I was shocked because when I read this review and then I bought this album, I was like, wait, what?
This is not.
And, I like Shaheem.
This is not 4 mics.
This is not a 4 mic album.
Look at this. This song. What is this?
This is Pass It Off, his posse cut.
Yeah, let's pass off this album to somebody else. Forget it.
All right, and there goes the question. In 2020, is AKA The Rugged Child treasure or trash?
It's trash.
Oh.
Come on. Anybody that thinks this is having fun listening to this album right now. Everyone's smiling listening to this.
All
right. You know, we should do another. You know the thing about playing it in the car? Do you feel happy playing a certain song in the car? I want to take it a step further, okay? Would you, on a date,
play this album for your date in the car. Now, I want all you guys out there and gals, would you play this song or this album in the car as you're driving to dinner on a date? I rest my case.
Nice.
There's no way in hell. That's it.
All right. We'll move on to our next album. It's the debut. It's not technically their album, but a debut EP. Creeping on a Come Up,
right,
from
EP, right.
Bone Thugs and Harmony. We typically don't talk about EPs on the show, but this was huge. This was a huge record.
Very much so, yes.
And it was released June 21st, 1994 on Ruthless Records. The debut album of Cleveland, Ohio's Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Right.
Crazy, Lazy, Wish, Busy, and everyone's favorite, Flesh.
Always a great name.
Flesh and Bone.
Of course.
Yes.
All right. Hawaii loved it. Hawaii loved this song.
Hawaii loves everything Bone.
Right. Shout out Just Bone.
Yep.
Hawaii loves West Coast. Hawaii loves Dr. Dre. Hawaii, this was perfect timing. Perfect timing to catch on to the West Coast bandwagon that was Dr. Dre.
Yep.
And it sounded different than Dr. Dre, too. So then it was even better. So like, wow. What is this fresh
These
stuff?
These guys single-handedly saved Ruthless Records from bankruptcy.
Yeah.
They saved Eazy-E's career.
Yeah.
Because, man, we remember, like, that Straight Off the Motherfucking Streets and that Real Motherfucking G's. That wasn't going to save him, even though that
I mean,
Real Motherfucking G's did well.
It did. But then all of his lineup, the roster,
yeah.
Cocaine was like nobody could understand with him.
He had BG Knockout and Dresta.
Blood of Abraham.
Blood of Abraham.
You know, I mean,
I don't know if you remember this. Ruthless Records had a group called HWA, Hoes with Attitude.
Yes.
That's right. And
I mean, he tried. He tried
their
whatever
album
he could.
Title was one of my favorites, and we're going to have a segment later in the later.
Talk about
Hoes
with Attitude later?
Well, no, we're going to talk about worst album titles and worst album covers. But Hoes with Attitude, their album was All the Ass You Want.
I agree. I totally agree.
That's it's got to be
Thank you,
there.
Hoes with Attitude. Yeah, yes, I totally you, agree.
All right, so little background. Did you know they're all family members? You know they're all related,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So Crazy and Flesh are brothers. Wishbone is their cousin. Busybone is their stepbrother. And then Crazy's the only one that's not related to them.
Oh, he's not
related.
He's
a childhood neighborhood friend that they grew up with.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. It's like a Brady Bunch
situation. What's the guy from Leave It to Beaver?
Eddie Haskell.
Eddie Haskell of the Bone. That's a dated reference, huh?
2021 yep. Leave It to Beaver reference.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, come on, Wally. I mean, okay, so perfect timing. They were a victim of, they were a success of timing.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, that's
really it.
I mean, these guys, they nailed it. But Eazy-E did not go out and search them. We talked about this on our crossover singles one. You know, they seek Eazy-E out because they love NWA.
Right.
And, right. You know, man. Like, what a find. You know, they had to track them down, rap in front of them, and they were known as Bone Enterprises back then.
Right.
Should we listen to a clip of Bone Enterprises?
Do we have to? Might as well at this point. I was going to say play some album cuts, too, because I never...
Okay.
I don't recall this album as well.
Well, let's just give... Bone Enterprises. So... Yeah. Eazy-E was the best thing that happened to them as well.
Pretty much. I mean,
he got them to change the production, change this.
This sounds like a generic version of that Naughty by Nature song. This is probably the remix of the Naughty by Nature song. What was that one?
It was the one with Queen Latifah, Everything's Gonna Be Alright. Has the same beat, right?
Same beat, yes.
Right. Ghetto Bastard.
Something like, God, we talked about this. But that Naughty by Nature hit.
Right.
Yeah.
Ghetto Bastard, Everything's Gonna Be Alright, right?
I don't think it was Everything's Gonna Be Alright.
Oh. They had another reggae-ish song.
This is the one, the champion. Hold on. The champion. Oh, yeah. What was that song? Damn it.
I think it was on the Naughty 3 album. But while you're looking that up, more info on Bone. They all grew up on the infamous St. Clair, East 99 block of Cleveland's Northeast Side. They all were basically dealing drugs at the time, and then they flew out to L.A. took a bus, actually, to California to see Eazy-E out. And it wasn't until Eazy-E actually came to Cleveland, they didn't get to see him when they went out to Cali.
Oh.
They were performed for him backstage at an Eazy-E show. Then he signed them to 93 and changed their names.
Wickedest man alive.
Wickedest Man Alive.
That's it's a straight ripoff of Wickedest Man Alive. Yeah. Play Wickedest Man Alive. It's going to sound the exact same
You're
thing.
You're absolutely right. I never thought of that, Wickedest Man Alive.
Same beat, everything. Jeez.
All right. God. We'll play another track. They were in a dark... No Surrender from the album. Oh. I don't know if you remember this one. This is like their bone, like going for the more like hardcore, fast song.
This is off the Bone album or the Bone Thugs?
This is all produced by LA producer DJ Unique. And he actually crafted the sound, right? He did Thuggish Ruggish Bone. He did this song.
It was a unique sound. Right. And it matched them perfectly. It worked.
And I remember when Thuggish Ruggish Bone hit, there was nothing quite like it.
No.
And people in the South were already yelling about, you know, they ripped off 3-6 Mafia. Right. And then people in the West Coast were saying, oh, they ripped off Freestyle Fellowship. And
right.
There's all this stuff going on, but you can't take away Bone's impact on the hip-hop world.
Oh, you definitely cannot. No. Historical value is definitely there. Definitely there.
And Easy convinced them to do more singing, and so that was the smartest thing for them.
Yeah, it made sense. It made total sense.
He was really, really well-versed in knowing how to market them.
Right.
Now, I'm going to play you a song that... a lot of people were not aware that Bone jacked the beat for. This is actually Ruthless signed record group Yomo and Malky.
Wow.
And this was their song For the Love of Money featuring Jewel, who would go on to be with Death Row.
Right.
But this was produced by DJ Yella.
Right.
And they needed another song for the Bone EP. And Easy said, Yomo and Malky didn't sell shit. Here, take their beat.
Take the beat. You know what? Times are hard. I didn't know that. This was the second single.
So this was Yomo and Malky, though. I'm going to play the Bone, but I just want to hear the Yomo and Malky. Okay. I mean, you couldn't get a more, like, it's the exact same song.
Right. Well, where's Yomo and Malky now? How pissed are they?
They're at a
are they alive?
Working at Jersey Mike's. I don't know.
At least they got a job.
Hey, I own that Yomo and Malky cassette.
That
I
says
shout
something,
out Wando.
Huh?
I think you mentioned that to me as well. The Yomo and Malky album. Yeah. But I think a lot of people didn't know that this entire song was jacked from an album that came out only 2 years prior.
Right. Wow.
Pretty nuts. And this became a smash. This song also became a smash.
Yeah.
You know?
Got a good beat. Sounds good in the car.
Right.
Yeah. I can see it. Yep.
Yeah.
Hit.
I think both this and Thuggish Ruggish Bone both went gold. They're both smash hits.
I see it.
And then the EP would go 4 times platinum.
I can see that.
Yeah. All right. So what's your mic review then and now of Bone Thugs EP Creeping on a Come Up?
Back then, because it was played everywhere, I was kind of annoyed by it. Because like everybody was playing Thuggish Ruggish Bone, and being that I was the loner, listening to this loner music, that all these people are invading my territory.
Right.
I didn't like it, so I would have to give it a 3 back in the day.
Okay.
But knowing the historic value of it now, I give it a 4.
Okay.
It gets a 4.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was 4 back then for me. It still gets a 4 now. Because there was nothing that sounded like this at the time.
No.
They really found something here. So
I kind of alienated it as a kid.
All right, I'm going to ask you. We're at the 58-minute mark. Do you want to do one last Treasure or Trash? It'll be pretty quick, but it's up to you.
What does that mean, pretty quick?
It'll be pretty quick, because I don't think you're going to want to talk about this group for very long. But it's
go
completely,
with it.
Completely
go with
up
it.
To you.
Let's go with it. Screw it. Go with it. Let's see how quick this goes. Okay, yeah. I'm curious now. See how quick this goes.
All right. For the next Treasure and Trash, it is the album Ambushed by the Bush Babies, released December 6, 1994 on Reprise Records. This is the debut album of Flatbush. Get it, guys? The Bush Babies, Flatbush. Brooklyn Trio, Mr. Man, Babyface, and Chaos, aka Lee Majors.
All right.
Oh, and we can't forget reggae artist YT.
Yes, there's a reggae. That's the guy right there. Rerun things.
And sorry, I said it wrong. It's Babyface Chaos.
Oh. Babyface Thanks for the Chaos. Clarification. Yes.
I know he's probably listening and so upset he's that pissed. I missed his name up, but
this is a good song.
This is their best song.
I like this song. Right. Their first single was trash. What was the first
swing
song?
Swing It. Here, we're going to play
awful.
It.
Awful.
It was awful, yes.
Yeah, play that.
This was like a gimmick in the 90s. They had to yell. You had to yell.
A lot of yelling in the 90s.
A lot of yelling. They all were children of Onyx.
They wanted to do like a tribe,
right.
Leaders of the New School, right. Onyx.
They wanted a video.
Jumping around.
They wanted a video where there's like about 20 guys in an alley jumping up, right. And down in black and white.
That was 93, 94.
Yeah, pretty much.
God.
When I heard this single, I was like, I'm not buying this album.
This is really dated. Really
rough.
Bad and rough and dated. Yep. This is like Boof Boff all over,
right.
Again. No. Garbage. We Run Things is good. The album, once again, not very memorable. You can play a song right now from the album that I missed for clarification here.
Strange production, too, on this one. They had Jermaine Dupri on here for some reason producing tracks.
Wow.
So this is a Jermaine Dupri produced track.
What is that noise supposed to be?
I don't know, man. Doesn't this sound like a crisscross sound on my hood? Like,
it sounds like... You can tell the Jermaine Dupri influence in this song.
Right.
The way the drums are, this is like the Brat and Crisscross, right. All over again.
So the members of Bush Babies were born and raised in Jamaica and Trinidad before moving to New York. And then Mr. Man and Babyface Chaos met at a hip-hop live show. And then they added the reggae toaster YT, who I think is the best guy in the group. I like the reggae guy the best. I'd rather hear the reggae guy than the
rapping.
True,
yeah, I can see that.
And just like the Fugees, they got signed to Reprise Records after only 3 months of forming the group because of their live performances. They were supposedly a spectacular live group.
Well, in the hip-hop world of the hip-hop fandom, for some reason, people hold very dear to their heart the Bush Babies.
Yeah,
but
shout
I'm
out
not
Justin
sure.
Park, who kept bringing up Bush Babies when we were at Bar Leather Apron.
I'm not sure why. I don't know how that got... maybe misconstrued somehow. It's kind of like, you know, remember like, you know, Bernstein Bears?
Bernstein
and then Berenstein Bears. And you think you know how to say it, but there's two different ways to say it. And it became this urban legend. The Bush Babies are an urban legend. People think that they're good. And they hold them as they're good. When they're not really good.
It's like eating a Taco Bell Mexican pizza. People want to think it's good. That was trash.
It was trash, but then it's gone and now everybody's sad. When, why? You weren't probably
so
even
is
ordering
the Bush
it.
Babies the Mexican pizza of the
90s? You know people like the McRib? People
Sean
get
Iman
excited
the
about
McRib.
The McRib.
Shout
for
out
what?
Friends of the show, Sean Iman.
For what? It's
loves
an urban legend. Okay, and I'm not even talking about pineapple on the pizza.
Right.
I'm just talking about urban legends that people think something is great when it's not really great. People hold that to the Bush Babies. They think the Bush Babies are like a legendary group. When they've only had this song, and then the love song.
This is the Remember We? Salaam Remy remix.
Salaam Remy?
And this is not the version on the album.
No. So remix once again, like Fugees, same
and
style as Fugees.
We Run Things. Those are the only two songs for this album.
Right.
They did release their follow-up album, Gravity.
Yeah, that's the one where they had Mos Def.
And then that had Mos Def on
love
it.
Love song.
Right.
They had De La Soul on there.
Mm-hmm.
So people like the Gravity album.
Right.
But I can't tell anybody that can give me five songs of that Gravity album that they love. I never got it. I never understood what the real... Why is everybody so
Well, the
Gravity
album had that Dilla vibe. Because they were going for that Dilla vibe at that point. And did Dilla produce some tracks?
He did produce it. And I think that's what built their folklore to be the urban legend of being this great group. Because you had Dilla on there. It's not. There's nothing memorable of the Bush Babies. Except this. Rerun Things.
Yep.
And then the love song.
Yep.
That's all I would hear. So I don't know how that built up to this enigma that the Bush Babies are like his top 10 group.
I've never heard that take, but...
Somebody's out there saying that right now, I think. Top 20.
Well, that's why I felt Bush Babies was a fitting group for Treasure or Trash, because there's a lot of people that really... I've heard them mention them in you know, in high regard. You know, they're like, oh, I miss the Bush Babies. But
no, you don't miss the Bush Babies, guy.
But no, I don't.
No, I'm not saying. I'm talking to all the people out there. You're saying that in a bar? Come on, you're not missing anything of them. I don't get it. It's some kind of misconstrued, false, delusional mirage. The Bush Babies are not a legendary group. But because they have the fact of they sound like native tongues. J Dilla.
Right.
All of these things that gives people, you know.
It wasn't even from this album.
Right.
I mean, the only thing was We Run Things was produced by Ali Shaheed Ahmed. So and people then, grouped
there you
them
go.
In with native tongues.
Native tongues. Yeah. So that's how they got it. They tricked people. They're trickeries. They've embezzled an audience. They've embezzled an audience by having Ali Shaheed as a producer, Salam Remy. You sneak them in there, and that's what you got. You got people thinking they're legends now. Let's put them in the Hall of Fame all of a sudden. Yeah. They're not going to Hall of Shit. There's nothing.
Sneaking out of the bushes.
Yeah. Let's trim the bushes.
So the group would actually split up after Gravity came out, but then they would resurface as another group in 2012. Do you remember what they renamed themselves?
Oh, Urban Thermodynamics?
Oh, no. But that's close, though, because the producer for Urban Thermodynamics, Joe Prinz, actually produced more than half of this album.
Speedy Politi? No.
The Dub Rock All-Stars.
Oh, forget it.
That's the worst name ever.
You see? That's what a legendary group's going to call themselves? The Dub Rock All-Stars.
The Dub Rock All-Stars.
Let's go get Mauki and what were the two guys that did the...
Yomo and Mauki.
Yomo and Mauki are laughing right now at this. I mean, come on. Quite frankly.
Well,
you know, that's it.
That was it, man. We're at 1 hour and 6 minutes.
Yeah, that's in
it. I think it was worth it just to get it off your chest about Bush Babies.
That's it. Yeah, I'm shaving that off my chest. That's it. The hell with it. That was awful.
Well,
what an ending.
Well, I'm glad you guys stuck it out for us. I'm going to play you Bush Babies one last time. We'll be right out.
Everyone.
Just because.
Yeah.
You're never going to listen to them ever again. So no. I don't think I need to ask you, Bush Babies, treasure or trash in 2020?
In 2020, the Bush Babies can get the fuck out of here.
All right. Now, of the three treasure and trash, Ill Al Scratch, Shaheem, Bush Babies, which one you going with?
I got to go with I'll Take Her with my man, Brian McKnight.
That's for the win, I agree with you. I'll Scratch for the win.
Ill Al Scratch
with my man Brad McKnight with the piece of paper. Now Creep I gotta go
me.
Find that clip. All right, we appreciate you guys hanging out with us and talking about old people shit. And we look forward to the next episode. Well, I look forward to the next episode.
Yeah.
Aaron, I can't speak for Aaron.
Yeah, look forward. Yeah, I like that phrase. Looking forward to the next episode. That's it.
All right, peace.